back. I'm off my jack. Keep your hands off of my stack.
Greg Farrell is the president and CEO of Farrell Wealth and is a registered representative with and securities offered through LPL Financial. Member FINRA, SIPC insurance products offered through LPL Financial or its licensed affiliates. The opinions of Greg and his guests are merely opinions. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult with your attorney, accountant, and financial advisor or tax advisor prior to investing.
Hey there, good morning. This show's Money Matters with Greg, and I'm Greg Farrell, CEO and President of Farrell Wealth. It's a wealth management firm that's local here in Valparaiso, Indiana. We're on WVLP FM in Valpo. We're also streaming live worldwide. The show is on WVLP.org, but also on our website, farrellwealth.com. You can find it there. You can stream it. You can also find it on iTunes, a number of different shows that we have. Up on iTunes talking about many of the different ways to be able to save you some money. The show was started a little over 2 years ago as an idea to help you save some money, sort of bring some financial literacy to you and your family. And now we have, close to 70 episodes up on iTunes. You can certainly grab from there. You can listen in numerous different ways, whether it be through Facebook, on the Facebook website at Farrell Wealth. You can find us there. We broadcast at 10 a.m. Central and hour-long show talking about money. We're going to talk about a number of different things here today. I want to be able to kind of run through some things for you, and I have a couple tidbits here getting into the Super Bowl. I want to talk about our picks on the Super Bowl. Not that they'll matter much, but we'll certainly let you know what we think is going to happen coming on Sunday. But we are broadcasting here at WVLP 103.1 FM. And like I said, you can find us on Twitter as well. Just tweet us some questions. We have a number of questions from the last show that have come through. I want to be able to get to those. We're going to talk about today, why is it so hard for most people to save money? Even the wealthy have issues with being able to save money. Want to talk about that. We're going to talk about some international stocks and some international flavors that are out there as far as what's going on the international side in the investment world. Would like to talk about some high-yield municipals and talk about some of their risk that's going on with the municipalities out there. And then I have a couple stories for you, too. We'll finish out the hour with a couple stories. But wanted to address today, to start out the show, why is it so difficult for people to save money? Even the wealthy really have a trouble. And there was a really good article on MarketWatch and MarketWatch.com. You can find it by going to MarketWatch.com and just searching why is it so hard for most people to save money. And I wanted to talk about this article. It's written by Maria Legmana. Hopefully I got that right. And certainly we will tweet her name out and make sure it's included as far as overall rights on this. But just want to talk about some of the things that that are basically blamed for not being able to put away money. We talk about money in this show. We talk about trying to save money, trying to establish an emergency fund, establish different accounts. We talk about making sure that your zero really isn't zero, making sure that your zero is something that's much more comfortable towards being at least 6 months of savings, 6 months of expenses saved up, all these different rules that we have to help you try to be able to help you add some value to your family and listen in, sort of come up with a game plan and a plan for you to ultimately retire and live a very beneficial life. That's the whole thing. Money isn't everything, but it certainly puts down a nice down payment on happiness. There are some great things that money does afford you. It affords you, it's been proven, it affords you better health and maybe even a better lifestyle, certainly if you are capable of being able to save some money. So why is it so hard for most people to save money? even the wealthy. And despite, you know, really, you kind of start thinking about it, despite an improving economy, Americans are still having trouble saving. And a shocking number of adults have less than $1,000 in savings, even when their incomes are more than $150,000 in combined income. And although people really have, people with different incomes have unique obstacles to saving money, there's this recent survey that was taken of more than 7,000 people from personal finance website GoBankingRates.com found that people at all income levels have a very little saved in savings accounts. And this comes from Cameron Huddleston. He says clearly, he's the columnist from Go Banking Rates. He says clearly people who are earning a lot are still struggling to get by, which sounds crazy, really. But if you're earning that much, why are you struggling? Well, of those whose incomes are less than $25,000, 38% had saved $0, and 35% had saved less than $1,000. Now, people who earned far more still reported low amounts of savings in the savings accounts. Of those with incomes of $100,000 to $150,000, 18% had saved zero in a savings account, and 26% had saved less than $1,000. And for the earners of $150,000 annually or more, whose numbers really they dropped slightly to 6% and 23% respectively, basically, people aren't just—they aren't putting the money away, and it's really important to note that Go Banking Rates didn't ask those surveyed if they had money saved or invested in other formats besides savings accounts. It was just one account, but it basically goes to show you that, you know, what's keeping up with the Joneses certainly affects everyone. And I have to say, with social media now as well, you really see much more of this. Before, you didn't know if your best friend in college just bought a brand new car in another town. Now with social media, it's posted, you know, maybe daily if they're one of those annoying people that you had to ultimately block. But for the most part, the information that's out there is very obtainable. So It really does affect you overall when you start talking about putting money away. Almost half of American adults could not cover an emergency expense of $400 without either selling something or borrowing money, and that's according to the Federal Reserve. You know, about 31% of non-retired adults have no retirement savings or pension at all, and among those who were employed but not enrolled in a savings retirement savings plan, 19% said they weren't even sure if their workplace offered a savings plan, which that's what we talk about a lot on this show, is just making sure that you are putting the money away and you are putting money into a retirement account, whether it be an IRA or whether it be your 401k or whatever it might be. But really, the one thing that is an excuse that we're seeing out there for many of the people that are unable to save money is that student debt remains a very large expense for many families. And not only are recent graduates paying their loans, but parents may be even still paying their children's loans, impacting their ability to retire. So, you know, our thoughts on a lot of this is you really want to watch some of the things that you're doing as far as 2017. We talk here about New Year's resolutions a lot on this show, and wanted to be able to sort of talk to you out there and let you know that we should be working. You really should be working through a plan here as you start 2017 to clean things up and to purge and to think about all your expenses and make sure that you are saving as much money as possible. One of the things that's been become quite the fad with high earners is the subscription services that you see out there now, such as music or video streaming. You have meal delivery kits such as Blue Apron or Home Fresh, where that monthly clothing delivery, it's become very commonplace, and it can also add up. You can it can also be very difficult to cancel or difficult to even remember you signed up in the first place with many of these things. So you really want to be able to make sure that you are watching what you're spending, and then basically $28 for a fashion box that shows up at your house, or $60 for meals or whatever it might be. If it's saving you money in the long run, well, then it could be justified. But if it's not saving you and you're not using it, think about that $60 that goes out, let's say, a week with some of these food clubs that you could be putting away into a retirement account or putting away into a savings account to make sure you're okay. With all this being said, the U.S. is still far from cashless. Just 18% of North American consumers made mobile payments regularly in 2015, and this is really a small increase from 17% who said they did in 2014. Many have never even, a third of Americans own one or two credit cards, and 29% have none at all. So there are definitely a lot of people out there still using cash and not necessarily going into credit card debt. But you can also show off all those purchases on Facebook and Instagram that almost 40% of adults with a social media account said seeing other people's purchases and vacations on those networks encourages them to buy something similar or plan something similar as far as a trip. And that's according to the survey of American Institute of Certified Public Accountants. Quote unquote, in this article, a psychologist and author Nancy Irwin says that social media can be a modern day version of keeping up with the Joneses, and some people feel inferior if someone they know has a shinier, bigger toy than they do. And just like I said, you might not necessarily know that so and so bought a boat or bought some purchase or a house or whatever it might be, but now you do. You see them all the time. So it definitely has an impact. Paying off credit card debt is really the primary cause for financial stress in many of the U.S. states, according to a separate Go Banking Rate survey. Americans have a collective credit card balance of $729 billion, according to the Federal Reserve Bank of New York. And that's below the peak of $866 billion that reached in 2008, but it's still higher. And, of course, there's ways to use credit cards to your advantage as long as you pay your bill in time. Certainly, there are some very nice benefits, but you also have to just make sure you're disciplined and you're not necessarily going to hurt yourself and hurt your family. The amount of that individuals were saving in Go Banking Rate survey remained fairly consistent across all age groups, showing that saving behavior may indicate more about someone's personality than stage of life. And despite those income levels, it really seems that people fall into one category or another. They're either spenders or they're savers. Rachel Podnos, an attorney and financial planner based in D.C., she said a spender is always a spender. And I have to agree with that. That's definitely something that we see in the wealth management world, where if you have a client that likes to spend money, ultimately, they're going to spend it, and it's just a matter on what. As much as you say that you shouldn't, as much as you try to do your job to be able to help these people, spenders really are spenders. And in her work, she sees some of the people who have high incomes but struggle to save for retirement, and people really, even those that have remained frugal throughout their entire lives, they can't even bring themselves to spend money, even when they receive unexpected funds like an inheritance. So when you're a saver, you're a saver. When you're a spender, you're a spender. And really realizing and recognizing what you are is really the first step to getting organized and having a plan. Typically, you want to be able to think about saving 20% of your income as a good general guideline that will help you get to your goals down the line. Now, that being said, that's not easy for a lot of people. So really, everyone's circumstances are different. For example, someone with a high income may still be paying off large amount of student debt, But you typically think about having at least 6 months worth of expenses stashed away, at least three, definitely one, and have it be liquid and not exposed to the financial volatility that's out there. Just make sure you have cash. Really, the same idea makes spending so easy that you can make saving easy as well, and just automate the entire process as if possible. I highly recommend, and recommend to clients all the time, that they automatically have savings taken out of their paychecks to go into retirement accounts and additional savings accounts, just so you don't have to think about it. It's really a good idea to kind of up those percentages when your income increases as well. You know, saving 50% more of a raise is a really good idea. If you can even save maybe even 30% to get it started, it's a really solid way to be able to make sure that you are putting money away. Particularly for people with lower incomes, you really need to live within your means and cut expenses wherever you can. That is key because based on a percentage basis, you're just not going to have the same bang for your buck overall. So really, you know, just wanted to address why it's so hard for most people to save money. You know, even the wealthy have issues with this. And, you know, a couple little points here. Make it automated as much as possible. Watch the clubs and the overall spending that you're seeing that electronics or the technology is adding to you, and the thoughts about all of that to make sure that you are putting some more money away for yourselves. So the show's Money Matters with Greg Farrell, CEO and President of Farrell Wealth. I am I've been fighting a cold here, so if you hear me sniffle, I apologize, but definitely fighting through it here a little bit on this Monday, January 30th. Wanted to wish to put a shout out to my older brother John. Happy 50th birthday, John, to you, and I hope you're having a great day. Today is his birthday, and I want to give John Farrell a great shout-out on this 50th. I'm proud of you, and I love you, and I just wanted to say that on air and let everybody know that if you see John and or if you know John, please reach out to him on his birthday, and I know he'll certainly appreciate it. So happy birthday, John. Happy birthday, brother. With that being said, we're going to talk about international stocks and some of the international things that are going on out there. I don't know if you're necessarily aware with everything that's gone on since November about exactly what is going on in the international space. So I want to talk a lot about that. I have a report here that I want to kind of go through and sort of mention. And then just real quick, just as a reminder, we are on iTunes. You can find us by searching Money Matters with Greg on iTunes. Find all of the past episodes. We have a number of guests on this show that we really, really enjoy. I want to thank all of our guests for being on here. We've talked savings and money, everything from real estate all the way to estate planning. You name it, we try to talk about it. And anything to do with money, this is your show. And we have a number of different guests coming on in the future here that I'm really excited about it. We have some international attorneys that do a lot of work in the app space as far as making sure that your intellectual property is managed and that you don't have any infringement on as a business owner on those things that you work with. We have a number of different people coming on in the future here, so I hope you will, you know, continue to listen. We're new and noteworthy is sort of an accolade in iTunes. We were nominated for that, and we've been a part of that new and noteworthy for quite a while. We're appreciative of that and all of our listeners throughout the nation and the world. Our wealth management firm that we started a number of years ago is now in a number of states nationwide. So we talk with a lot of clients about their concerns, and that's kind of how this show kind of started, is how can we help? How can we pay forward here? And that's why we're on a nonprofit group here at WVLP 103.1 FM. And always appreciative of what they do and their message and their mission as well. That being said, let's talk international stocks. Look, really want to look towards the east here a little bit. We always have a tendency to always be looking towards the west. But after years of earnings recessions, improving corporate earnings, and relatively low valuations, you're really seeing the overseas investments look much more attractive than they had been in the past. And for all the consternation over the discussion of this geopolitical and this macroeconomic issues that you see, really what ultimately drives stocks everywhere are corporate earnings, and earnings almost everywhere are increasing. A lot of analyst estimates of future earnings have also been increasing. So what the analysts do out there, and if you're not familiar with how these earnings work, if you have estimated corporate earnings and they're not increasing, well, then obviously that's not necessarily a good thing for investment. So with earnings increasing, and they are increasing everywhere, there is sort of this positivity and optimism that's out there as far as what is going on with the current U.S. market, and then also on the international side. We've really seen that despite the lingering uncertainties about the impact of Brexit vote and the U.S. election, we've already seen a dramatic increase in earnings in emerging markets in 2016, while 2017 expectations for both emerging markets and developed market stocks really continue to improve. So I wanted to be able to bring that up because right now, many people are worried about the international side, yet there's going to be opportunity there, and I just don't want you to miss it. So the biggest positive surprise may come from Japan as its market really restructures. Valuations are generally attractive on both an absolute and a relative basis across most of the markets, and there's been a relatively constructive push on emerging markets for most of 2016. And now you're looking into international markets being more reasonable. We've talked in this show a number of times about how expensive everything is in the U.S. market and how things are certainly fairly priced, if not overpriced in some different markets. I used a shopping analogy last week. You are really walking into a very fine retail establishment and paying full price right off the rack. There are really no discounts, and it's very difficult to find discounts nowadays. So when you're looking for value and you're trying to find value in your investments, look no further than Europe and emerging markets. Really want to talk about this end of the drought that's been going on. Before something can go up, it must go down, and corporate earnings have been declining since the second quarter of 2011 in both the EAFE index, which is the EAFE index, and the MSCI Emerging Market Index. Note that really what gets referred to as an earnings recession for the S&P 500 was very shallow by comparison, and it really only began in the third quarter of 2014 for the U.S., but only a handful of companies inside the EAFE, inside the European index, have reported 2016 earnings as of January 20th, 2017. And expectations for a strong quarter and a calendar year in 2016 earnings will end just over 1% growth. Now, that's not very inspiring, certainly, but if the year should show positive growth as expected, this would be the first annual growth since 2011. Europe's been a mess. I mean, it's been just an absolute mess as far as earnings potential and growth since really 2011. Although we had our great recession here, theirs was much worse. In fact, they went into two of them back to back, and they've really had issues coming out of it. So you really want to look for where they might actually get out of this, these doldrums, and it really will come from energy and energy-related industrial sectors where earnings really have been declining along with oil prices in 2015. The impact of oil over $45 a barrel will be evident in the 2016 earnings, but really not until 2017 will we really be able to kind of know. So the drought in emerging market earnings growth really kind of turned in the first quarter of 2016. And I mean, though there were less than 3% of emerging market companies that reported earnings yet for 2017, market expectations are for over 17% earnings growth for the index in 2016. And in developed markets, earnings for energy, also material stocks, have really been rebounding with higher prices globally. So, look, when it rains, it pours. Like to be able to talk about how we often say it's earnings that determine stock market performance in the long run. Really, you just want to also be very interested in the shorter-term impact of estimated changes in future earnings. From almost all international markets, earnings forecasts in 2017 have increased, and a number of geopolitical events have occurred since then. Obviously, the likelihood of UK's departure from the European Union will happen with more changes. Do we do a soft Brexit or is it a hard Brexit? You really have that anti-European vote that's in Italy and the election of Donald Trump. Certainly here, was promised this more the protectionist U.S. trade policy. You know, each of these events could have really dampened earnings forecast. But right now, you really have to be thinking about the valuations out there because they continue to be attractive in overseas markets. And typically, we look at this sort of data over a short time period. A longer perspective really shows how harmonized global equity markets, including the S&P, have become. You've really seen market movements that are much more synchronized now than they used to be, which is a negative for investors looking to diversify overseas. But, you know, if the market are indeed more correlated to each other, that really implies that buying when markets are attractively valued may be more important, which is really, really nice to be able to find value. Like I said, it's difficult to find value out there right now. It's not necessarily all that easy. We are buying right off the rack at Tiffany's, that's for sure, in this country. So wanted to sort of just review that and just let you know that we are cautiously optimistic on Europe and emerging markets for you as investors. I always like to be able to make sure we're bringing some good information to everyone out there listening and making sure that you are taking advantage of some of these things and just use the information. You're always going to work on your plan. You're going to gather your plan, gather the information that we have on this show, and we can help you with that, and then hopefully you can take advantage of it. The show's Money Matters with Greg on WVLP 103.1 FM. I'm Greg Farrell, CEO and President of Farrell Wealth. It's a wealth management firm, and I'm a licensed financial advisor on wealth and with any of the finances that are out there. So if you have any questions for the show, it's 219-476-9000. You can find us on Twitter, at Farrell Wealth on Twitter, and you can also see us on Facebook as well, and then farrellwealth.com. You can stream us at wvlp.org. My name is Greg Farrell. As I said, I just want to be able to take a quick break here and give our little commercial for the show and get a chance to be able to take a sip of coffee, and we'll be right back in a bit. Thanks much.
This is a story about Billy Joe and Bobby Sue. Two young lovers with nothing better to do. They sit around the house, get high and watch them too. And here's what happened when they decided to cut loose. They headed down to Pueblo, El Paso. I swear they ran into a great big hassle. Billy Joe shot a man while robbing his castle. Detective down in Texas. knows just exactly what the facts is. He ain't gonna let those two escape justice. He makes his living off of the people's taxes.
All right, thanks, Steve Miller. I really appreciate it. Take the money and run. And that's what we're trying to do on this show, 103.1 FM WVLP. The show's Money Matters with Greg. I'm Greg Farrell, CEO and President of Farrell Wealth, a licensed financial advisor, and we talk money on this show, trying to help you save money and also make some money along the way as you walk towards sunset, like we all are on a path towards. Somebody's sunsets are a little bit better than others, but here we like to be able to make sure that we can help you as much as possible along the way. It is a nonprofit. WVLP is a nonprofit, so if you are interested in advertising on the show or advertising with WVLP with any of the programs here, which are just fantastic, love the lineup, and the lineup just keeps on getting better. You can call the show here at 219-476-9000, and then also find us on Twitter. At Farrell Wealth is our Twitter handle, and it's F-A-R-R-A-L-L. It's two A's, two R's, two L's. Will Farrell is a very funny comedian, but he spells his name miserably wrong. We spell it the right way. So it's at Farrell Wealth on Twitter. You can also find us at farrellwealth.com for more information. And also a number of different things out there as far as educational pieces for you that are financial literacy type pieces that can help you save some money along the way. We were talking early about some of the things that are going on in Europe. I want to finish up on that real quick and then sort of make our way towards some of the things that are going on in the municipal bond market, kind of fill you in on that, and then kind of wrap up with maybe a story or two about how to save some money, some interesting stories out there that I wanted to bring to you. But one of the things we almost finished, we were talking about the Japanese economy and some of the things that are going on in Japan as far as the value. And really, the Japanese economy, for the most part, its stock market has really been waning for so long. It's hard to remember that Japan actually used to be used to matter as a global investor. It used to be very, very important, and it just hasn't in a number of years. Even after years of stagnation, Japan is still the world's third largest economy and the second largest stock market by overall capitalization, at approximately 8% of global stock markets. And Japan may finally represent a long-term investment opportunity. And why? Well, first, there's earnings growth potential. And likely, look, on this show we talk all about, I know we talk about earnings growth a lot on this show, but that is exactly what we look for when we're looking for investments to be able to make sure that they have good earnings growth. If they do, that's a great start as far as finding things that are valuable. So that earnings growth potential in Japan is likely to be 4.5% for 2016, and expectations are 11.7% growth in 2017. You know, the bigger issue for Japan is the potential change in how investors view the country and its stocks as a result of the significant change in how the country and the companies in it operate. This shift really has been only happens in emerging markets, but Japan has seen major changes since its equity market peaked in 1989. It's been that long since the Japanese market peaked. And historically, the Japanese market had features that made the market relatively unattractive. I mean, many of these attributes they've sort of evolved that some ways the Japanese market is more conventional now, and therefore really kind of more attractive to foreign investors. Japan used to be in a really expensive market with the price-to-earnings ratio, or the P.E. ratios. We talk about this show all the time. P.E. ratios are a way to be able to value companies as far as the risk-reward that's out there. And P.E. ratios at one time were well over 70, and at times in the hundreds during some of the market peaks, such as 2002 and 2008. Now valuations, those valuations were high for two main reasons. First, Japan had extraordinarily low interest rates for years, and now Japan is no longer alone in having low or negative interest rates. And second, all of their success in gaining market share and creating global brands, Japanese companies were not very efficient, and as measured by statistics that you kind of see out there, that's return on equity or their ROE, that is so valuable in valuating a company, they're not as profitable as similar companies based in other countries. So for those reasons, many investors stayed out of the Japanese markets and really sort of walked away from it. That is all changing in the last few years. They've had a very old, aging society as an overall country. And really, as time has gone on and many of those people have passed away, you're now seeing a change and a shift that the financial structural component is in the potential Japanese equity revival is the undoing of the system of the kind of the cross holdings across Japanese companies. Now, this is known as Kyutsu, and under the Kyutsu system, Japanese companies often own shares of each other. And this really suggests sometimes that corporate decisions are made for the benefit of other companies under this massive umbrella rather than profit maximization or shareholder return. You know, the number of shares held within this system has declined dramatically in the past few years. And as a result, the result of Japanese shares held by foreign investors has increased. And as investors gain confidence in that corporate managers are working for them, not for themselves, their employees or other companies within this system will only get better. So basically, want to be able to kind of conclude on our international conversation and an overall discussion about Japan, but improved earnings overseas are motivating global investors to kind of examine the areas that have been out of favor, either for the past few years, like emerging markets, or the past few decades, like Japan, and really finding that these improving expectations of future earnings, more attractive valuations, and sort of the, in the case of Japan, positive structural changes in the way of companies operate. Look, it's been interesting to see that these things have improved, and we're really positive on emerging markets, even with the current administration's adherence to globalization and free trade. It's not as bad as you think it is out there, and there is some value in some of these markets. So you really want to be looking for some of the places you can be able to go, whether it be in an index or whether it be in individual countries or whatever. Do your homework here. You want to be in a fully diversified portfolio. You want to own a portion of emerging markets. You want to own a portion of international markets, international stocks, as well as a number of other things inside that portfolio. And right now, as badly as things have been overseas for a number of years, things are definitely looking more and more positive. So we are excited about that. It's a really good report. And that report comes from LPL Financial. You can find them at LPL Research. LPL is a broker-dealer that we work with, and they do a great job in the research department. And they have a bunch of big brains over in Boston at the offices over in Boston that do a fantastic job. Highly recommend you follow them on Twitter. They're at LPL Research. You can find a number of these different reports that are free, and you can also find this report on our website, but this one comes from the report on international allegiances and international news that really we look east to Japan is really the name of it. It was written by Bert White, who's the chief investment officer, and then Matthew Peterson, who's the chief wealth strategist for LPL Financial. So I want to thank LPL for all their good insight. They always do a great job, and we always make sure we give them accolades. With that being said, I want to be able to jump into, in the last 20 minutes of the show or so, into the high-yield municipality market and really just sort of talk about do the risk outweigh reward in municipalities. So with municipal bonds, many of them are tax-free on the federal side or the state side, and also the local side. It just depends on what necessarily which bond you go into or which bond fund you go into. And it's very interesting to see why you would necessarily want to go into a municipal bond. those earnings are tax-free on one or all of those levels I just mentioned. And you really want to be able to make sure you do your homework with the investments. Obviously, you could invest in bonds in Illinois, in the state of Illinois, but those bonds might not necessarily be as good as, let's say, Indiana bonds, just because of the budget and because of what's going on with the budget in Illinois. So you would then get a larger coupon for the risk that you're basically taking on. And that's exactly what we want to be able to talk about today, is in high-yield municipal bonds, which is the riskier side of bonds, do the risk outweigh the reward right now in this current environment that we're seeing? Look, with interest rates rising, you have to remember that it's not a matter of whether you're going to lose money in bonds, it's just a matter of how much. We have not seen an upward rising interest rate environment for a very, very long time, and the 30-year bull bond market is over. We have to be very, very careful that our bond portfolios that are for those that are conservative and they just want to be able to clip some yield and clip some coupons and take their ball and bat, go home and not have any risk. Well, you're seeing a number of things really deter that, and you want to be careful with your bond portfolio. So that's why we're bringing it up here on the show today, to be able to make sure that you're careful. With the positive return in December of the municipal bond market, it was up 1.93% in December 2016. And a year to date right now, month to date data for January shows it's up 1.7% as of 2017. The Bloomberg Barclays Municipal High Yield Index really has recovered, because this comes from the after the post-election sell-off. Basically, it was down 6% return in November 2017, which is an enormous drop-off, and it went straight down after the election. So benefiting really from lower supply and a technically favored month where coupon payments, maturities, refinancing cash flows, it's kind of all tend to be reinvested back in the market. In January, may have investors looking at high-yield municipals once again to kind of seek that additional yield. They've been looking for there's been a whole search out there for yield in the last few years because interest rates are so low. Where can you go get yield? Where can I just get a dividend? You've seen it in a number of the run-ups in the market with a number of dividend stocks that are pushing high to higher levels overall. So we want to sort of just talk about some of the things that what our thoughts are on high yield municipals, and really just talk about whether you want to be able to go for that extra yield or not. And really, as a group, we kind of remain neutral on high yield municipal bonds because of these longer maturity profiles that you see out there. Greater price sensitivity and rising rate environments is also another reason you just sort of we're not necessarily crazy about it, but the sector really does kind of comprise lower rated issues, and this kind of exposure to riskier scrutinized bonds like tobacco or corporate backed securities, project finance, or hospital bonds are all things that a sector that really could be impacted by the changes in the Affordable Health Care Act, and who knows what it's going to happen with that. But on a positive note, yields are compelling, and default risk is a key variable in determining price volatility. This is really something that we're not necessarily seeing as much as you would in something that was more riskier. So this recent recovery really may offer an opportunity for suitable investors to take advantage of higher prices to reduce the longer exposure to the duration that you have to go out. And basically what happens is you have to go out further and further on the timeline to get more yield and get more coupon. And so what happens, you know, over time, some people don't necessarily want to risk that much because they have to wait longer for the bond to ultimately expire, and then they get to reinvest in new bonds. And with interest rates rising each time, their investment might not necessarily be as good as time goes on. So the interest rate sensitivity that you're going to have in the municipal bond index, you know, that's the leading benchmark for this sector. So you're going to hear a lot of it right now, as we say. It's a Bloomberg Barclays High Yield Municipal Bond Index. And it has an average maturity right now of 20 years. And that makes prices very sensitive to interest rate movements and explains the losses experienced in November of 2016. You know, by comparison, the average maturity for the Barclays High Yield Corporate Bond Index, which would be corporate entities, that's only 6.3 years. So you've got to go out 20 years for a municipal bond index to be able to have the same sort of yield. You know, really, the longer the maturity and the duration, the more sensitive the bond price is to interest rate changes. So the duration of a high yield index is 8.6 years. So therefore, if interest rates rise by 1%, the price of the index would be expected to decline approximately by 8.6%, assuming no other changes happen. So the longer duration of the bond, the higher yield should be, as investors really need that compensation for additional time it takes to recover their principal investment. And historically, short-term bonds perform better in rising rate environments. And you're seeing it right now in the overall rate market. Since investors can recover their principal sooner and reinvest at higher interest rates, that's certainly a more favorable place to go. But prior to October 2016, as interest rates moved lower, investors piled into lower-rated municipals, searching for that higher yield. And as a result, average yield spreads between top-quality AAA-rated general obligation bonds, or GO bonds, and triple B-rated GO bonds fell to a post-recession low of 1.25% in August of 2016. Basically, nobody wanted them. And the increased supply then came into the market during October and November as issuers pushed this type forward, these deals, in hopes of getting ahead of the election. And it was in a well-telegraphed Federal Reserve rate hike in December. Basically, the issuers wanted to get that, get those bonds out. And this really caused spreads to move higher and really cheaper for triple B bonds entering into December 2016. So although those spreads widened to more attractive levels, it's really important to remember that the technical conditions tend to weigh heavily on municipals entering into May through August periods. And that's those are high times of issuance throughout the year, or May and August. With interest rates still historically low and the Fed signaling two or three additional rate hikes this year, issuers may come to the market with more supply, which could negatively impact those spreads. So when you look at the yield, the proposed tax rate reductions are out there, discussed by the Trump administration, have investors sort of wondering if the tax-exempt benefit in the municipal bond market would be negatively impacted. If you go into a municipal bond, you want the tax-free, you want the tax-free benefit. And really, at these current prices, high-yield municipals appear to have a large enough after-tax advantage to mitigate the risk of the lower rates. So that's really good. I mean, you start looking at the taxable equivalent yield of 10.5%, assuming that you're in a 39.6 tax rate. You know, in comparison, the yield on a Barclays high yield corporate tax rate is 5.87. So you really have to start thinking about this if you are going to go into municipal bonds for those tax benefits. So with that being said, we really remain neutral on high-yield municipal bonds overall, and this, again, comes from LPL Research at LPL. It's a piece that is on our website and is readily available. If you want a copy of it, I'm happy to email it to you as well. Just contact me at 219-476-9000. I'd be happy to email it to you or send it to you. I'll actually have it on Twitter as well. You'll be able to grab it from there. But the asset class, as far as municipal bonds goes, really should remain sought after in 2016. It just there's just too much out there to guide us or not to guide us. As the yield advantage and the lower default rates really make this sector, attractive for certain. But based on history, supply tends to become a headwind moving into February and March. And investors, really, you should understand that the interest rate risk is very prevalent in all bonds, but especially with high-yield municipals. November 2016, when high-yield municipals lost 5.6%, really should serve as a reminder of the potential volatility that are going to be included here. And then, you know, just thinking about the sell-offs, sell-offs of that magnitude are really rare in the fixed income market. That is a huge move, and it's really important for investors to remain diligent in their asset allocation choices. Obviously, we talk about well-diversified portfolios on the show all the time. That goes as well for your bond portfolio. You want to have a shorter duration profile and an allocation across various sectors and different asset classes that sort of help protect against that additional volatility. You want to be investing in a number of different things, and you want to be able to make sure that you're diversified across the board. We talk about waterbed on this show a lot. If you sit on one side of the waterbed, the other side goes up. Our job is to flatten out the waterbed and to make sure that everybody gets a good night's sleep. And that's what we're trying to do here and trying to help you with your finances overall and make sure that you are diversified and investing wisely. I want to share a quick kids story with you before we finish up. This is at freestoriesforkids.com. As many of you know out there, I am a father and a proud father. I've got three great kids and a wonderful wife, and just want to be able to I share some of the things I see out there and some of the things that I use as a dad. One of them is freestoriesforkids.com. It teaches, this story teaches kids about some of the things in regards to money and some of the things that you want to be teaching your children. And this is a story about a number of different children that basically are taught about money, because every month Julia and her cousins would go for a big family meal at their grandparents' house. And they would always sort of wait excitedly for a moment. Their grandfather would give them a few coins, and he'd always say, "So you can buy yourself something." Well, then all the children would run off to buy chewing gum and lollipops and you name it, and certain candies. And the grandparents, aunts, uncles, and parents commented that behaving like this, the children would never learn to manage their money. So they proposed a special test in which the children would have to show over the course of the year just what they could manage to get with a few coins. So some of the children thought they would save their money. But Ruben and Nico, the two smallest kids, paid no attention, and they continued spending it on sweets and moving on. Every time they would show off their sweets in front of the other children, laughing and making fun of their cousins all the time, that would make Clara and Joe so angry that the two would no longer stand to keep saving their money. So they joined Ruben and Nico in spending whatever they had, and as soon as possible, and usually spend it on sweets. Now, Monty, he was a clever boy, and he decided to start managing his money by exchanging it, buying and selling things, or betting it on other children in card games. So soon, he had surprised the whole family. He had accumulated a lot of money with little effort, and the way he was going, he would end up with a very rich man. However, Monty was not being very careful, and he got involved in more and more risky deals. A few months later, he really hadn't a single penny left, and after placing a losing bet on a horse race. So that obviously didn't work. Alex, on the other hand, now he had a will of iron. He saved and saved all the money he was given, wanting to win the competition overall and beat all of his cousins. And at the end of the year, he collected more money than anyone. Even better, with so much money, he managed to buy sweets at a reduced price so that on the day of the competition, he was presented with enough sweets for much more than the entire year. And even then, he still had money left over for a toy, which he spent on himself, and he was the clear winner. And the rest of his cousins learned from him the advantages of knowing how to save and how to wait. And then there was also Julia. Poor little Julia didn't enjoy the day of the competition at all, because even though she had had a wonderful secret plan, she had spent her money without giving her plan enough time to work. However, she was so sure that her plan would be a good one that she decided to carry on with it and maybe change the expressions on their relatives' faces, who had seemed to be saying, "What a disaster this little girl is. She couldn't manage to save a thing." Well, when she was about to complete her second year of the plan, Julia surprised everyone by turning up at the grandparents' house with a violin and a lot of money. What was even more impressive was hearing her play. She did it really, really well. Well, everyone knew that Julia adored the violin, even though the family couldn't afford to pay for her lessons. So Julia got to know a poor violinist who played in the park, and she offered him all the coins her grandfather had given her if he would teach her how to play. And although it wasn't much money, on seeing Julia's excitement, the violinist agreed, and he taught her happily for months. Julia showed so much desire and interest that a little over after a year, the violinist loaned her a violin so that she could play together, that they could play together in the park as a duo. They were so successful that gradually she managed to buy her own violin with quite a bit of money to spare. From then on, the whole family helped her, and she became a very famous violinist. And she would always tell people how it is possible, with just a few coins well spent, to make your wildest dreams a reality. Just thought it was a great story. I wanted to share it with you. A lot of lessons in there. You can share with your kids or you can use yourself. Show's Money Matters with Greg. I'm Greg Farrell, CEO and President of Farrell Wealth. It's a wealth management firm here locally in Valparaiso, but also serving clients all over the U.S. Hopefully we help you on this show and give you some ideas and some thoughts as far as saving some money, having some guests on the show, and also some good stories that might actually help you save some money down the line. You can find us on iTunes, like I mentioned. Just search Money Matters with Greg. You can find us on Twitter. Reach out to us. We'd love to be able to hear from you. If you'd like to be on the show to talk about some money and some of the things that you do or some of the investments that you do, or maybe you run a company, we've had a number of different guests that are business owners on the show. Any topic you want to be able to share with us, we're happy to listen. 219-476-9000. In the meantime, I want to thank Greg Kovach for being engineer today and knocking it out here on January 30th. Once again, want to put a shout out to my older brother, John. Happy 50th, John. I love you. Thanks for being my awesome brother. And I certainly want to wish you well. So happy birthday to you. And I hope everybody has a fantastic week. We'll catch you next week.
Greg Farrell is the president, CEO of Farrell Wealth, and is a registered representative with and securities offered through LPL Financial. Member FINRA, SIPC insurance products offered through LPL Financial or its licensed affiliates. The opinions of Greg and his guests are merely opinions. All individuals should get their proper advice investing and managing their personal finances. Money. Get back.